You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
The European Union, specifically Germany, has agreed to put an...
Oops, sorry for that, Trishel. Just a little preview into your piece.
Exactly. Like, as I mentioned, the European Union has announced the intention to institute an oil embargo against Russia amidst the war in Ukraine. I sat down and spoke with Professor Stephen Hotley from the University Politics Department about the move and the potential fallout from it. The European Union, specifically Germany, has agreed to put an oil embargo on Russia following their conduct in the war in Ukraine. How would this affect the global oil prices?
Germany's decision to phase out oil in the next few months and to phase out gas perhaps within the year is certainly going to have an effect on energy prices in Germany and probably throughout Europe. This is one of the great concerns, that the economic boycott will translate itself into political discontent amongst those who have to pay the additional prices. Now, with regard to the world output, Russia will continue to export to countries such as India, some African countries. No doubt China will also take more Russian oil and gas. So consequently, in those countries, the price increases may not be quite as dramatic as they will be in Europe. Europeans are trying to make plans to import more from the United States, both oil and gas, liquefied natural gas, to increase the intake from the North Sea and from the Mediterranean gas and oil fields, and to ask the Middle Easterners to ramp up their production so that more energy will go onto world markets, and this will help to reduce the price increase. But the question is certainly apposite. The war in Ukraine and the consequent European weaning off of Russian energy have an impact on prices. Yes, it does, a serious impact, and they're all in price rises rather than price falls. So this is pain at the pump. And right around the world, we're all going to have to take that pain as a consequence of doing the right thing to assist Ukraine to resist Russian aggression.
The decision to put an oil embargo on Russia is only just yet another step in full sanctions, like with coal imports already being blocked. What else could occur that would fundamentally damage Russia?
Yeah, what more can be done to sanction Russia? Well, if the Germans and the Europeans generally, the European Union generally, stops all of its energy imports from Russia, that really is the major item. Russians are getting, we're told, $1 billion a day in payments for that energy, and that $1 billion will stop. The Russian treasury will be depleted. The ruble will decline. The Russian standard of living will go down because the Russian government's ability to produce welfare, education, health, and other benefits will decline because they won't have the money to pay for these services. And consequently, the boycott of Russian energy will have this effect. What more can be done? Well, already a large number of Russians are under visa sanctions, so they are not welcome in Europe, in the United States, in New Zealand, for that matter, and pretty much has run its course. My personal view is that sanctioning people like Medvedev, the tennis player, is incorrect, because we can't really draw a direct line between Medvedev, the tennis player, and Putin, the dictator. I think we should be tolerant of individual Russians who are innocent, who probably disagree, although they may not be able to say so out loud, because their families might be at risk in Russia if they did voice opposition to the war. But the leading Russians, those who are complicit, those who are in the ruling circle of Putin, will not be able to travel. Their assets have been seized. Their yachts have been seized in various countries. Their bank accounts have been frozen. The major banks of Russia have been ostracized from the SWIFT system, from this international payment system. So it's much more difficult for them to convert dollars into rubles or vice versa, and to do business on the international scene. So all of these measures could be tightened up. The number of banks, the number of individuals sanctioned could be increased, but I think probably we're sort of 80% to 90% of everything that can be done has been done, and it's just a matter of waiting for them for these sanctions to take effect, to show the ruling oligarchs and Putin's entourage that there are serious economic consequences for what they're doing in Ukraine, and hopefully to induce them to think again and perhaps to compromise and hopefully even withdraw from Ukraine in order to regain the economic privileges with the rest of the world that they used to enjoy.
Will continued sanctions push Russia further to establishing their ties with China, as they've done in the past?
Yes, the notion that Russia will move closer to China is certainly correct. It's already happening. There is a kind of friendship agreement. It's not quite a military alliance, but in some respects it moves in that direction. Russia and China have joint military exercises. They have frequent consultations. The two presidents apparently have good rapport with each other. They're similar sorts of people who are strong central leaders, we would call them dictators, who are taking decisive action to pursue their country's national interest. China has an insatiable appetite for energy, and Russia apparently has unlimited supply of energy. So there is potential there for a closer relationship. In fact, later on next week, I'm giving a lecture to a Pakistani National Defense University, and the theme there is the Russian-China rapprochement, or agreement, or cooperation. Is it a counterbalance to President Biden's Indo-Pacific strategy? And the notion here is that two, Russia and China, the two giants, by teaming up, will in fact be equal in perhaps military power, in energy production, in population, to the United States plus Europe plus other partners like New Zealand, Australia, Japan, in a kind of bipolar strategic rivalry. Not quite a Cold War yet, but we're certainly moving in that direction. It'll be different to the Cold War, but it, in very broad outline, a bipolar rivalry with many countries like India trying to stay out of it. India, Indonesia, most of Africa, most of Latin America are saying, look, this is a European problem. It's not our problem, and we don't want to have to take sides. In some respects, New Zealand is in that very same position, that New Zealand's best trade partner being China and best security partner being the United States does not want to choose. It wants to deal with both and to avoid any kind of unfortunate choice that would reduce New Zealand's options.
With Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky urging for peace talks to occur to end the war, but in comparison, Russia not stepping down, are we going to expect to see some kind of stalemate at some point where both sides are fully exhausted?
That's an excellent question, and my reading is that it's ambiguous at this time. Zelensky at one time says we want a ceasefire. At another time he says we will continue fighting until all Russian troops are out of the country. The Russians have no intention of removing their troops from the country and do have secure positions in the southeast and the Crimea. So realistically speaking, as the New York Times has editorialized just yesterday or the day before, compromise is necessary, and the fear is that if there is a ceasefire, which would be stop the killing and stop the destruction of hospitals and theaters and urban neighborhoods, which would be a good thing, this will simply give the Russians time to regroup, to rethink their strategy, to replenish their troops, their ammunition and their weapons, and then strike again at some future time, which might be within a year or two. So the war will continue. And I look at it something like Korea. As you know, South and North Korea are still at war. They have a ceasefire, an armistice. They have a demilitarized zone between the two Koreas, but technically the war continues, and North Korea does continue to make forays into South Korea with commandos. They sank a South Korean corvette a few years ago. They've shelled South Korean villages. They dig tunnels under the DMZ. So maybe there's a comparison there that a divided Ukraine with maybe one-fifth of its population and area terms will be Russian-controlled, four-fifths will be Ukrainian-controlled and supported by the West, including New Zealand. And that kind of long-term stalemate, tense stalemate, with occasional flare-ups of armed conflict may be the scenario of the future.
And that was Professor Stephen Holdley talking to me about oil sanctions announced by the European Union against Russia and the potential issues and fallout surrounding the move.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.